The Human Podcast features weekly service audio from the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia. Please visit us at human.org.
Good morning, Human. I'm Valeria Camaño, a Human member. On behalf of Reverend Dave Dunn, Director of Religious Exploration Lexi Brown, Music Director Alex Peach, my fellow worship associates, and the dedicated technical team that is making today's live stream possible, I would like to welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation, which we lovingly call Human. We are a liberal faith community with the mission to nurture our spirit, strive for justice, and transform the world. No matter who you are, who you love, or where you are on your spiritual journey, you are welcome here. Also, if you are visiting us for the first time, feel free to scan the QR code on the back of your printed order of worship or the code located at the greeter's table to get in touch. We have a few adult enrichment offerings this morning. Please refer to your service, your order of service for the class locations. All ages are welcome in service. There's also a fidget shelf for children of all ages in the back of our sanctuary, and nursery care is available. The holiday pageant is coming up on Saturday, December 23rd at 4 p.m. Our candlelight service will also take place December 23rd at 7 p.m. Children's religious exploration this week will consist of holiday pageant rehearsal in the sanctuary. Children and youth exploration classes will resume after the holidays. The religious exploration schedule for the next several weeks is printed on your order of worship. This month's 50-50 recipient is Family Promise. Half of any checks specifically designated as 50-50 and half of any Givelify donations specify 50-50 will go to Family Promise. Elizabeth Rohan would like to make an announcement about service regarding MLK.
Hi, everybody. I wanted to let everybody know that our MLK Day of Service this year will be at Fur Kids headquarters in Coming Again. I will be sending out an email this week. There are activities outside and inside, so if you're allergic to cats, that is not a problem. And if you do want to spend time with the cats, we do things like read books to them to help socialize them and things like that. It's very fun. So please, you'll see more information in the email. Thanks, and see you on January, I think it's the 15th this year, but anyway, MLK Day, you know when that is. Thanks, bye.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Oh, we also have a Playscape announcement from John Pruitt and Donna Melcher.
Hi friends, I'm Donna Melcher, and I'm part of the Playscape team. Thank you, tech team. And I'm sure most of you remember last week when Kelly Callen and Josie Burkhart gave us our Playscape cheer. Let me see if you remember it. It goes, Playscape, Playscape. Playscape! Yay! Well done, well done, well done. Well, I know that most of you know that we're building a playscape over in the in front of Discovery Hall inside the white fence. And what you may not know is that this space is going to be structured around the seven principles represented by our faith and around the educational philosophy of Primo. It is our intention to be inclusive and welcoming of different sensory and physical abilities. And the project and the fundraising for it is fully embraced by our Board of Trustees, our minister, and our Director of Religious Education. Is Lexi here today? Lexi's here. Anyway, 2 weeks ago, we sent out a project definition document to our key stakeholders and to the whole congregation. And we want to gain input from everyone, and we're closing that input at the end of this month. So please, if you have any ideas or feedback, for the document or the playscape in general, now's the time to see a team member and let us hear your voice, especially if you are a family with children. You may also have heard that this project is a prototype for the Little Kids Big Ideas, and youth are represented on our team by Josie Burkhart, Dylan Callen, and Kyson Philippi. What you may not know is that the beginnings of this playscape started about 10 years ago. We respect and give gratitude to anyone that has touched this project over the years, and we're hoping to take forward your learnings and are especially appreciative of any input that you have to offer. Our goal is to finish the project by the beginning of the school year, and we will need your help to do so. We know that Human will support us with time, talent, and treasure as we request it, and we still have some key roles to fill. So please, if someone from the board or someone from the team ask you to lend a hand, help us complete this dream that was visioned long ago of a wonderful, inspiring place for our children to enjoy. This project will be a legacy for Human that we can all contribute to. Thank you.
Last night was a very special Common Ground Coffee House concert. For the past 12 years, Coffee House has been run by Janet Lacey and David Stevens, and they have been forever dedicated, well, for the last 12 years, they've been dedicated to this effort, booking acts, setting up, tearing down, doing it each and every month. So it is with a heart full of gratitude that Human thanks them for their talents and their timeless efforts making the Coffee House the success that it is. We couldn't have done it without them, and we thank you, Janet and David. They are home in bed, I'm sure. Moving forward, Laura Keck will be helped by several others in continuing to host the Coffee House beginning in January. One final announcement, we have a lot of announcements today. As you probably know, I'm taking sabbatical beginning on February 1st through the end of May. So I wanted to reintroduce the sabbatical team. Amanda Brawley and Ever are sick. Amanda is going to be the chair of the sabbatical team, so she's not here today. And I'd like other people to come up, but Bruce Langston, you can stay back there. He's running our live stream, but Bruce is on the sabbatical team. Anu Mangia and David Krober. Is there anybody else? Tina Alexander, yeah, you're here. So Tina, David, Anu, Bruce, and Amanda Brawley are gonna be on the sabbatical team. We have the pulpit, is all the positions are filled. So we have mostly ministers filling different every Sunday, other than the normally lay-led services. So they're all done. So we're just gonna have to pay them and get the descriptions and bios and all that stuff for them. But we have money set aside for this. So it's gonna be, I think, a really exciting sabbatical for you. You'll get to see different people every week. You won't have to hear me all the time. So anyway, any questions about sabbatical, you can talk to the team, okay? Today's call to worship is by Thomas Starr King. He writes, "I believe that if on every Sunday morning before going to church, we could be lifted to a mountain peak and see a horizon line of 600 miles enfolding the copious splendor of the light on such a varied expanse. Or if we could look upon a square mile of flowers representing all the species with which the creative spirit embroiders a zone. Or if we could be made to realize the distance from the earth to from the sun, the light of which travels every morning 12 million miles a minute, to feed and bless us, in which the force of gravitation pervades without intermission to hold our globe calmly in its orbit and on its poise. If we could fairly perceive through all our outward senses one or two features of the constant order and glory of nature, our materialistic dullness would be broken. Surprises and joy would be awakened, and we should feel that we live amid play of infinite thought. And the devout spirit would be stimulated so potently that our hearts would naturally mount in praise and prayer. Thomas Starr King.
Weavers of One Story by Leah Ongirl. Here we are together, each facing our different human tasks, or maybe the same central one, to embrace the lessons of life delivers, to discern and respond as we grow, to refuse harm and cherish flourish. We may know ourselves as vessels of infinite possibility, holders of each other's heartaches and tales of joy alike, weavers of one story in which we each have our part.
In 1864, United States Congress set the old House of Representatives building aside to be used as a national statuary hall. And each state was invited to instill in the hall statues of two of its most outstanding citizens who were distinguished by extraordinary civil or military service. For California, this proved to be a long and exacting task. For 67 years were to pass before the state finally came to dedicate its statues on March 1st, 1931, in the nation's capital. On that day, two bronze figures were unveiled. One, Father Juniper Serra, who was a Spanish missionary and eventually canonized to be a saint, and the other, Thomas Starr King. Thomas Starr King, who was he? And why was he a man who was not even native to California and lived there for less than 4 years, given the great honor of representing the state in the Statuary Hall of the U.S. Capitol? He was born 199 years ago today. On Bruce's birthday, yes. 109, December 17th, 1824 in New York City to Reverend Thomas Farrington King, a Universalist minister, and Susan Starr King. His father passed away when his eldest son Thomas was just 15. And as the sole provider for the family, Thomas had to drop out of school, but yet he embarked on a period of self-study that led to him at age 20 to become the called minister of his father's former pulpit at the Charlestown Universalist Church outside Boston. In 1849, he was then called by the larger Hollis Street Unitarian Church in Boston. He became a well-known preacher and orator, yet he was looked down upon somewhat by the Boston Unitarian elite since he did not have any formal New England education. He was initially reluctant to accept a call to the First Unitarian Church of San Francisco, thinking that he was not talented or strong enough, and also preferring the security of his position at the Hollis Street congregation in Boston. But then in 1860, he changed his mind and wrote, I do think we are unfaithful in huddling so closely to the stove of civilization in this blessed Boston. And I, for one, am ready to go out into the cold and see if I am good for anything. I devoutly hope that I have not made a mistake, and that by consecrated labor in California, I may be of service to the good cause and to the brethren. He arrived in California along with his wife and young daughter on April 18th, 1860. Someone, perhaps Harry Truman, would later say, a great man is simply a good man who happens to be around when greatness is needed. Well, it could be said that Thomas Starr King was that good man who happened to be around when greatness was needed. In 1861, the Civil War broke out when the Confederates fired on Fort Sumter. What would California do? It had been a state for only 10 years. What did California have to do with this new war back east? Was it of any of their concern? Many in California used this time of conflict back east to advocate for that California strike out on its own. Congressman Charles Scott said, if this union is divided and two separate confederacies are formed, I will strenuously advocate for the secession of California and the establishment of a separate republic on the Pacific coast. Now, this view may not have represented the view of the majority of Californians, and most knew that California would never secede to join the Confederate states. Yet many Southern sympathizers in California hoped that the state would withdraw active participation and support on behalf of the Union and remain a somewhat silent, neutral party. The idea of California being a silent, neutral party in the conflict was abhorrent to Thomas Starr King. He wrote a friend back east while on a speaking tour in Oregon. He writes, 3 weeks ago, I heard a discussion on the Columbia River between a Southerner and two Yankees while I was on a steamer's deck. One apostate Yankee said, well, I look upon this as a family fight on the other side of the mountains. It's nothing to me. I mean to keep clear of it. My interests are here. If my interests get involved and I'm obliged to fight, I'll fight where my interests require. Thomas Starr King continued writing to his friend. Those were his exact words on the deck of that steamer, that he would fight at last under compulsion where his interests dictated. My face did not burn anymore against the Southern secessionists there, but for one wild minute, I ached to throttle this Yankee and push him into the Columbia. But I looked down, however, and saw that the water was clean. He always had a sense of humor. In the face of such Yankee apostasy, Thomas Starr King took it upon it himself to advocate for California's active participation in and support of the Union. During his 4 years in California, he traveled constantly throughout the state, up and down the West Coast, speaking wherever and whenever. In his biography of Starr King, Robert Munzingo writes, occasionally a church would be available, but just as often, the speaker's platform was nothing more than a hay bale in front of a stable or even the steps in front of a saloon. In cities such as Poker Flat, You Bet, Last Chance, Hangtown, later changed his name innocently to Placerville, Rich Bar, Gold Run, Rattlesnake Bar, Indian Diggings, Brandy City, Hell's Delight, Dead Man's Gulch, Murderer's Bar, Poverty Hill. always drawing from a rich sense of humor, King wrote to his friend, "What a blessing that the Spaniards had been the first naming rights of the rivers and mountains and saved us from such barbarous names as the Yankee Jims would have given." Yes, he had a great sense of humor. He wrote one friend, "When asked to speak before an agricultural society, I said, 'You will not expect any learned, scientific, or very practical talk from me tonight about farming. I know very little about farming. If you should ask me whether potatoes grow best in sand or clay or loam, or if you should ask me what loam is, it would be all over with me. I would not engage to identify a Durham bull from a Devon, and it might be difficult for me to distinguish a Merino sheep from a goat. Certainly, I am not able to distinguish the sheep from the goats as yet from among my parishioners." Yes. Yet his speaking abilities were unparalleled. One San Francisco businessman recalled that when he spoke the word sweet, I could always taste it. And he didn't mince words when trying to stir the spirit of Californians against the rebellious slaveholding Southern states. He said, "Rebellion sins against the Mississippi, it sins against the ballot box, it sins against the oath of allegiance, it sins against the public and its beneficent peace, and it sins worst of all against the cornerstone of American progress and hope, the worth of the laborer and the rights of us all. It strikes barbarism against civilization. And let us be done wincing about the word abolition. Let's give it a wider meaning and bind it on our foreheads, saying we stand for the abolition of the rebellion of the Southern states, for the abolition from the continent, from the leaders of it, for the abolition of the cornerstone and foundation of the conspiracy which has attempted to abolish the American flag." We need voices like that now. He reminded his listeners that the democratic American experiment was still young and had not yet fulfilled its true ambition. He said, "The distinctive feature of true patriotism is that it is pledged to the idea with which one's native country represents. It does not accept and glory in the country merely for what it is at present or what it has been in the past, but for what it may yet be." And as the war dragged on, with staggering casualties on both sides, he continued to advocate for staying the course and seeing the war through to the end, saying, "But is this not a strange way to establish peace, by fighting on such a scale as the Republic now witnesses?" We answer, the rebellion gave the challenge, and now victory at any cost is the only economy. Carnage, if they will it, is the only path to peace. We must crush the rebels' power. Any other issue to the war is simply chopping off the rattles from the snake instead of drawing the fangs. Not only was Thomas Starr King instrumental in California's sights on staying with the Union, he was also perhaps the most instrumental organizer of support of the Union's Sanitary Commission, an organization that would later become the American Red Cross. Dr. Henry Bellows of the Sanitary Commission said, "California has been our main support and money, and if she fails us, we are lost. I can only stutter, noble, tender, faithful San Francisco, city of the heart, commercial and moral capital of the most humane and generous state in the world." In 3 years of fundraising, and with Thomas Starr King leading the way, California collected $1.2 million for the Sanitary Commission out of the $4.9 million that was collected nationally. So California collected 25% of everything that went to the Sanitary Commission. And that is a feat done by a population that was half of New York City. That's California at that time. In the end, he was credited by U.S. Congress and President Abraham Lincoln as saving California for the Union.
In early 1864, Reverend Thomas King contracted diphtheria and died on March 4th after a short illness. Many thought he became susceptible to the illness due to the ceaseless traveling and overwork. After his death, the state legislature adjourned for 3 days so that its members could travel to San Francisco for the funeral, and the state and the municipal courts also went into recess. A newspaper said, "The whole city should be out in general mourning today. Let the business world suspend traffic, close the stores."
The New York Times stated that the sudden and unexpected death of Reverend Thomas Starr King today at once surprised and saddened the whole community. It is universally conceded that no man had ever done so much as he toward making California loyal to the Union, while his untiring zeal in forwarding every benevolent enterprise made him generally beloved. A San Francisco newspaper wrote, "A stroke of lightning falling from yesterday's cloudless sky would not have seemed as astounding as the knowledge that Thomas Starr King, who was largely instrumental in the first stormy years of the rebellion in saving this state from political death, himself was lying in that bright sunshine, cold and pulseless. Many were the tears of sorrow shed, many were the mourning faces, deep was the depression, and profound the regret. For many hours after the first announcement, mourning faces hung around and near the cold form of the beloved pastor, the dear friend, the now silent patriotic heart."
A San Francisco periodical stated, "A stranger landing in a city and seeing these evidences of public mourning on every hand might suppose that a great battle had been lost or that some plague had swept over the city. Yet, if asked the cause of all this mourning, he could merely be told, Thomas Starr King is dead."
Again, Starr King's biographer Robert Monzingo writes, "In San Francisco on Sunday, March 6, 1864, the time of Thomas Starr King's funeral was announced by the firing of guns on Alcatraz and answered with a battery mounted in Union Square. Governor Lowe and his staff took their positions in the line of parade. Flags were flown at half-mast on all the buildings in the city, both public and private, including all the foreign consuls. All ships in the harbor flew their colors at half-mast, including the ships of England, Russia, Hamburg, Colombia, and France. The city of San Francisco made an exception to the law forbidding burial within the city limits and permitted King's sarcophagus to remain on the Unitarian Church grounds. To this day, King remains the only person on whom this honor has been bestowed."
Thank you.
On August 31st, 2006, the California legislature approved a joint resolution to replace Thomas Starr King's statue in the Statuary Hall with a statue of Ronald Reagan. The resolution was authored by Republican State Senator Dennis Hollingsworth, who stated that, "To be honest with you, I wasn't sure who Thomas Starr King was, and I think there's probably a lot of Californians like me." He also went on to observe that King was not a native of the state, though. Of course, neither was Reagan, nor was Junipero Serra, the other statue representing California in Statuary Hall. As a result of this resolution, King's statue was removed from Statuary Hall, and the statue of Ronald Reagan was there on June 10th, 2009. In November 2009, Starr King's statue was reinstalled within the Civil War Memorial Grove in Capitol Park, which surrounds the California State Capitol in Sacramento. It was formally dedicated in a ceremony held on December 8, 2009.
After his death, Californians named a mountain in Yosemite after him. Similarly, New Hampshire also named a mountain after him in the presidential range of the White Mountains. In addition to the Unitarian Universalist Starr King School of Ministry, located on the University of California, Berkeley campus, four California public schools also bear his name. A pastor in a California mining town relates the following. "I have been a pastor in rural mining towns and in San Francisco, where again and again I found old people with recollections of the eloquent preacher Thomas Starr King. Some years ago, the officials of the Methodist Church decided to take down one of their ancient crumbling buildings in the old town of Volcano. Some old miners there sprang to its defense. 'Tear down the old church in which we heard Starr King preach? No, sir.' And the officials had to spare that old relic of a bygone age."
Daniel Webster was one of the great politicians and orators of the 19th century. Unitarian minister C.A. Bartle was enamored with Mr. Webster's rhetoric, yet when comparing him to Mr. Thomas Starr King, said, "We admired Webster, but Starr King we loved. One convinced our reason, the other captured our hearts."
Good morning. And thank you all for continuing to support the 50-50 program. And thank you for the work you're doing on this too. The congregation is very generous with 50-50. But I want to talk a little bit this morning about Family Promise and what Family Promise does for those of you who don't know. So if you imagine yourself as a woman with children in an abusive relationship, and perhaps he's the sole breadwinner, or you know that you don't make enough money to support yourself and your children, what do you do? Do you stay in that abusive relationship, or do you leave and sleep in your car? Do you try to find a place to live? Do you try to pull yourself up? And who helps you pull yourself up during this process? So Family Promise exists to help families, and there are other predicaments. I use this one just as an example because of the people that I've spoken with at Family Promise. This is a recurring theme. And so Family Promise works with faith communities in the area, and these faith communities house and feed the families for 90 days while folks can get their act together and figure out their next step. And Family Promise also helps them transition into additional housing. So there's fewer and fewer and fewer options in North Fulton for affordable housing. I mean, you drive around here, you can see the ridiculousness of the housing situation. And if you drive down Fraser Street, if you go down where the Family Promise headquarters is, Grove Way, you can see that they've torn down all of the apartments over there. And they're building, you know, $750,000 condos and things like that. So what do you do? Family Promise holds out that hope and helps these people. One final thing I will say about it, homeless shelters, you will often hear people say, well, why not a homeless shelter? Well, with homeless shelters, if you have a boy, if you're a mother with a boy, and that boy is over 12, they will take that boy and put him in a men's shelter. So they're in affect separating families. So if you can imagine being a 12 or 13-year-old little boy and you're not able to spend the night in the same room with your mother, in the same place as your mother, and you're put into a homeless shelter with men who are suffering from mental illness and all sorts of other things, how scary that would be, which is the reason why a lot of these moms will stay in their cars. So just so you know, Human has been involved with this for years, and we house and we feed, along with the Majid next door, the Roswell Majid, we partner with them, and we do this good work because it matters. And so if you can participate in the 50-50 this month, thank you very much. And you will hear more from Mike and Donna, Mike Chambers and Donna Guile, coming up about our next time to help with Family Promise. So stay tuned for that. Thank you.
Thomas R. King writes, "We are warned by our history not to distrust the capacity of the human race to attain a social order upon the earth of a higher stamp than it is any yet secured. It is justice which, thus far in human experience, has been heaving the foundation of society, and that some of its principles may gain a solid place. But there are dreams of man, yes, promises of a wisdom higher than man's, that this earth is yet to be the scene of organizations nobler than that of justice. Nobler than that of justice, organizations of love. It is inspiring to think of some far-off centuries as destined to witness the birth, the progress, and the completion of such a blessing for our race." Thomas R. King, talking about organizations of love as the foundation of future society. Love at the center. Star King's biographer Robert Monzingo writes, "How fitting it is that California should have chosen a man whose vision for the future of the state was matched, perhaps even exceeded, by his extraordinary ability to make men see the immense wealth residing not in the gold that they were seeking in the California hills, but residing in the values they could choose to live for, in the beauty of the earth of which they were appointed caretakers." Thomas Starr King, go in peace and enjoy your week.
The Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia, thanks you for listening to the Human Podcast. Background music, courtesy of Tim Moore from Pixabay.